Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, everybody. We have an awesome guest for you for Freebie Friday. As always, Freebie Friday is sponsored by JLD Hot Sauces and Knives. Guys, they have the best hot sauce. Their award-winning hot sauce, Boot Jolikia. Andrew, I butchered it, right? It's extra hot. It's my personal favorite. Thai flavors. They also have Reaper Madness Special Reserve made with the Reaper pepper from Carolina. And for the brave, you can get the Death Shot. It has the extract of 10 Reaper chilies in each 1 ounce bottle. JLD also has the highest quality handmade knives you'll find anywhere, including ones for hunting, fishing, and cooking. And guess what, guys? This month, we have a special offer. If you go to jldsharpsauce.com and use the code SAINTS and get 10% off your order, that's jldsharpsauce.com. Use the code SAINTS. If you spend $25, we will send you a sweet, sweet Saints Happy Hour podcast magnet. So do it now. All right. So we got the man, the legend, Nick Underhill. People text me and DM me, and they're like, why don't you argue with Nick? I'm like, I do not argue with the man who has charted every single Drew Brees pass. I don't do that. I make Eli Apple jokes on the morning news for Channel 4. That's my lane. I don't argue with Nick about X's and O's.
You used to fight me a little bit.
I did, but then I was like, he's just out of my world. Like, the thing is, Nick, I tried to do X's and O's, but people like you are so much better at it, and I just, like, I'm not good at it. Like, I tried to dive into it, and it's not my thing. So I'm just like, no, it's not my thing anymore. I'm just gonna do my jokes and my Saints history, and that's my thing. So here's the thing. The Saints are playing Philadelphia, and before we get to all the X's and O's and why we have you, I feel like I want to talk to you. You cover the Saints, and you've covered New England, and I feel like I want you to explain differences between covering Belichick and the guy who wheels in $200,000 of cash on top of the Lombardi, like a rap producer. It just seems so different. Is it as different covering the two teams as I imagined it would be?
Yeah, it is. And people like to think that they're kind of like the same guy because they both come from the Parcells tree. And I mean, there are some similarities there in just the way they run practices and organize things and everything. But yeah, I mean, I think the example you just gave was probably like the best one ever. Like, Belichick's not wheeling in $200,000 like at all. He's probably just like going to stand up there and be like, you know, let's go win it again. And, you know, that's it. But like, you know, Sean does, you know, he does a little bit of theatrics. He's a more emotional guy, I think. You know, he's definitely true himself. Like, when I saw that tweet yesterday, like, at first I'm like, no way this happened. Then I was like, wait, this sounds like it absolutely happened. Like, Sean definitely did this. He flew in a mascot from Michigan State to troll his players. Like, this really, like, is totally in line with what he does. And I mean, you know, the other thing though is if Belichick did that, like, I just don't feel like an attorney would have heard about it either. You know, I just somebody would be hung out, you know, as an example for everybody right now. And, you know, I don't think they like that stuff getting out, but I don't think that it's nearly as secretive as New England is. And that's a good thing. He kind of lets his players, you know, be themselves. And I think having that personality is one of the reasons they're playing so well this year. And, you know, they like to have fun and they do all that stuff. And there's the dance videos, and you just would not have any of that stuff in New England. And if it did happen, it definitely would not be posted on social media because, you know, Belichick has a team of people probably scrolling everything all time of day. Just nothing ever gets out.
It's true.
Yeah, it's amazing. Hey, Nick. So, let me jump in here, Nick. So as we're approaching the playoffs, you're feeling this, I'm sure, on Twitter. Saints fans in general, Saints Twitter particularly, are in a full state of panic. I was hoping that the injury report that came out yesterday, which suggested that everyone's back at practice, although five of the six top offensive linemen are limited, so we don't really know what that means. I kind of want to ask you, like, as far as a guy being limited at practice, what does that actually mean? Because I think you actually show up at the practices, you see them go through it. Are they, like, off to the side, like, just doing side work? Are they doing half of practice, then sitting out the second half? Or are they pretty involved? Like, when you see something like limited, how is it so vague? What does that typically mean?
We don't see the whole practice. We see about maybe 20 minutes of it, and it's, you know, stretch, jogging, a little bit of positional work, and then we're out of there. So we don't see the whole practice. We don't see team drills or anything like that. And that's probably kind of where you would see if somebody's actually, you know, working towards playing or not. So it's tough to get a gauge on it. But, you know, when we're out there, we do see them running. You know, yesterday we saw the offensive line doing a little bit of, you know, one-on-one blocking, and I didn't see anybody sitting out then. But, I mean, you know, those aren't live reps, so you could hide something a little bit. But, you know, Bushrod has a hamstring, and you see Bushrod into that injury report yesterday was really weird to me, because it's, you know, a bunch of guys that hadn't practiced in 2 weeks are now limited, and, you know, I'm looking at it like, oh, okay, these guys are on the right track. They're probably getting close to playing, if not, you know, this week, next week. And it seemed like everybody's like, oh, well, they're limited, this is a big deal. And it's like, no, this is probably a really, really good thing. You know, Andrew Speed has a hand injury. You can probably hide that in the playoff game. You know, you probably play through it. Bushrod's running. You know, Armstead, to me, that's the wild card. You know, I feel like if he can get that arm going, he probably will try to play. You know, that's just who he is. I just don't know if he plays, even if you look at it like, oh, okay, he's back. I think you look at it like, okay, he's out there for as long as he can be out there. And whether that's a whole playoff run or two quarters, you kind of take what you can get and hope for the best. But I'm looking more at Bushrod just for that safety net, because the drop off from Armstead to Bushrod is one thing. The drop off from Armstead to Will Clapp, who, you know, he's developing, it's a huge drop though. So, I mean, you know, they need that safety net.
Well, that's my question, and we've sort of discussed it on the podcast, and Andrew has a theory, but from you, what's sort of the crossover point from, okay, they're missing this guy and maybe this guy or whatever, to, and it'll be okay, to, okay, they've crossed over, now it might be a crisis. Like, what's the amount of guys they can miss and shuffling they can do where you'll be like, oh, it'll be okay, and then it comes to, no, it's going to be a problem.
I don't know if you hit crisis mode this week against Philadelphia, just because, you know, I think the Saints receivers will be able to get open pretty quickly. So even if you are at, you know, Will Clapp playing, starting, playing the whole game, you know, I think you can get rid of the ball pretty quickly and still be okay. Against Dallas, though, you know, they got the linebackers in the middle of the field. It's not going to be open. Kamara's not going to be getting open really quick. You know, they can get physical with Mike Thomas and you know, you just saw it in that last game. If the line's bad against Dallas, their defense is so good that it could be a problem. And then, you know, the Rams, you kind of look at who's healthy, but I feel like they could hide it there again. But
okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? you need Indeed.
You know, it's just, if, you know, if the line's healthy, I think Dallas is a really good game for them. You know, you just kind of lean on the trenches, both sides, and you should come out favorably and be able to beat them. But if your line's banged up, you know, now can you score the 24 points that you probably need to score to beat them? I don't know.
Nick, we shared some texts this week, and I had a tweet earlier this week that kind of touched on this. So I think I know what you're going to say, but I'd like for especially the panicking Saints fans that listen to this to hear it. And my feeling was, you know, the Saints are 13-3. They're the top seed, and yes, Philadelphia is a different team than when they played them last, and they look a lot better. Nick Foles has got it going. They were very fortunate to get out of Chicago, but nonetheless, you know, they get out of there with a win. And now you've got eight teams left, and you know, every game theoretically is going to be hard. You're going to get everyone's best shot. You know, there's eight teams left in the league that are theoretically the best eight left. So by no means is this going to be easy. But when I look at these two teams, this is why I personally feel so confident. You look at the Saints, the number one seed, 13-3, they're playing at home. And then when you look at these two rosters up against each other, I just feel like you go up and down the roster. With the exception of maybe tight end, I don't see a single spot. I mean, quarterback, the Saints are better. Playmaker, Kamara is the best. Receiver, Michael Thomas is better than anything the Eagles have. Number one corner, Lattimore is better. Linebackers, I give the edge to the Saints. Best pass rusher, Cam Jordan. Best kicking game, Lutz is better than Elliott. So, I mean, I go up and down the roster, and I'm strongly on the Saints side of a weighted advantage.
Did you guys know that Nick Foles won five of his last six games, but Drew Brees has won 14 of his last 15? Did you guys know that?
Did not know that, no. This is news to me.
Right? I mean, because, you know, the Saints only beat him by 41, so it's just weird to me that, like, there seems to be, like, so much talk about, like, this being a scary game and everything. I just don't see it. I mean, it's going to be a different game. I'm so sick of saying that already, because like everywhere I talk, but it is going to be a different game. They aren't going to win by 41, but they're playing a team they beat by 41, and that team lost their starting quarterback, and that starting quarterback was the MVP last year before he got hurt. And their team is playing better, and there probably is a belief when Nick Foles is in there because they won a Super Bowl with them. And you know, that's a great thing, and it can be a powerful thing that you kind of rally behind. But he's not as good as the other quarterback. So, you know, I just think the Saints are, like you said, I just think they're better everywhere. And, you know, they should win this game, I feel like, pretty easily. I'm going to pick them by 11 points at least when I put in my prediction. And, you know, I feel pretty comfortable with that. It could be more. It could be less. It's the playoffs. Weird stuff happens. But if they don't kind of handle them, I'm going to be looking at this game a little bit funny. And it's like, you know, they just killed them the last game. I don't understand why so many people are scared of this team. Is it this weird thing about them, like, going for broke and playing with house money? And, you know, I don't really even understand what that means. The defending Super Bowl champions, they have a lot to lose. They have their season to lose. So I just don't get it.
Well, I have a question for you a really interesting statistic that you guys had on your podcast that I listened to yesterday. But before I get to that, my fear with Nick Foles is being in Houston, and I watched that Texan game, and he lit up the Texan secondary. And granted, it took 474 yards, four touchdowns, and Philadelphia still barely won because their secondary can't cover anybody. So that's in the back of my mind. But you brought up an interesting point on you guys' podcast. Nick Foles, he throws to a certain spot on the field all the time. Could you explain that to our listeners and what you found and how it may or may not affect what the Saints want to do?
Yeah, I'm still trying to, like, figure out what exactly this means. So I kind of figure out what it means to me. I'm still kind of like,
you got to keep tinkering in the lab.
Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely a thing. He likes to throw between 10 and 19 yards to the right side of the field. And it's like, it like the split from that area of the field to the left side of the field is drastic. It's like, you know, 25 attempts to the right side and like five to the other side. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's like that split. Well, you know, I might be a couple off the top of my head. Like it's definitely that big. And, you know, he likes to go to the middle of the field and that right side of the field. And, you know, it's it's a thing where he gets the ball out really quickly. I don't think they have him going through, you know, deep complex reads the same way as Wentz. So that, I think that's one thing that, that kind of changes with the offense. And my initial theory is that's why that's kind of happening. But, you know, it's definitely a thing. And if they decide to play sides or something, it's just kind of, you know, somebody could kind of just, you know, set your defense up to kind of have a little bit of attention or maybe a lot more on that side of the field. And, you know, I think that helps maybe make him a little bit more uncomfortable if you take away that first read and he has to go elsewhere with the ball. But, you know, that's definitely something that's going on with him that you didn't have with Wentz. And, you know, those are the differences. You know, I think Foles is a good quarterback. You know, he's probably better than, you know, maybe even, you know, Dak Prescott or something. But, you know, he's not a top 10 guy. I think Wentz is a top 10 guy. And I think, you know, Foles is probably a top 22 guy, you know. So it's just, he just doesn't scare me. I know he can do some things and they like to get a little bit more creative when he's in there, but he's just not as good of a quarterback.
So if you look at what the Steelers did, and that was obviously a great game, very competitive, and the Steelers had some success moving the ball. And, you know, the Saints were fortunate to get out of that game with a win. They played well. They deserved a win, I think, but it was hotly contested. When you look at Foles and you look at what the Eagles, I just watched that Bears game, and there was a point in that game where they didn't even bother trying to run the football anymore. It was just clear, like, we're not getting anywhere running the ball. It's not going to work out for us. You know, the Saints, for a long time this year, were number one in the NFL against the run. I think they end the year number two. Do you go into this game, you look at what the Steelers were able to do, and really that's the most recent tape where the Saints actually were trying in a game, and I think that you could actually take something away from what they were doing on film. Do you think Philadelphia goes into this game with a game plan offensively of, like, we're not going to run the football, so we're barely going to even try, and we're going to do the five wide, we're going to try to attack. We know we're deep at receiver, so we're going to try to attack the Eli Apples, the PJ Williams. We're going to spread it out, and we're going to try to take advantage of our depth at receiver, and that we're going to see a very skewed pass-to-run ratio. Do you think that's how they kind of approach this game offensively?
You know, I do respect that they have been in the run. There's a lot of teams that will just keep running into a brick wall just because they feel like they have to run, and, you know, well, this works off of this run play. And
Seattle, for example.
Yeah, or, you know, the Saints have done it in some games too. It's just, you know, they wanted to work some stuff off the run, and they'll do it. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, I like teams where if it's not happening, it's just screw it. We aren't going to run the football. And that's kind of been Philly for a while here. Like, they just kind of, their running game just kind of fell off, and it's been a little bit weird. As far as the five wide stuff, I think that's something that would probably expose any team, because a lot of teams just aren't that deep at the defensive back. But if you're forcing them to put Chris Banjo on the field, I guess you're kind of gaining an advantage there a little bit. I don't see it from them. You know, their offense has actually been kind of shifting towards going more heavy. And, you know, obviously they could come into a game and do something and surprise everybody, or just have, you know, a little package of, you know, 9-10 plays with a bunch of receivers. And like you said, they are deep at receiver. So they are one team that could probably do that, and it wouldn't be too much of a stretch for them. You know, their top four are really good. And then I don't know who their fifth guy is, but you could definitely justify putting your fifth receiver out there, you know. But I don't know if Foles is the guy to kind of do that. And you got five guys out there, so, like, you need a little bit of time to let stuff develop. And that's just not really been his method of operation. But now that you mention it, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they tried to do some of that, because it did work so well for Pittsburgh, and it did kind of expose a little bit of a vulnerability within the Saints defense.
Nick, I've been on a couple of Eagles podcasts this week, and the podcast people that I talk to, they worry about their secondary, but they sort of say to me, look, our secondary has gotten a lot better. Maddox is playing better, the rookie. Our secondary is a lot better than when you guys face us. We've been really good the last month. And at first I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I looked at their schedule the last month, and my theory is their secondary reminds me of like the 2014, 15, 16 Saints. Well, remember, the Saints would start in a hole, and then they'd get to 5-5, and the defense would look better because they'd play really bad quarterbacks, and would be like, man, it's really turning the corner. They got it together. And then they would play
Matt Stafford, Kirk Cousins, would roast them, yeah.
Mariota, and they would just get roasted. And you'd be like, oh, yeah, they are terrible. Like, I feel like the Saints are going to be able to do whatever they want in the secondary with Philadelphia if they get time. Do you feel that way? And do you feel like there's a guy that's not a big name, maybe it's Ginn or Josh Hill or another guy, that's going to have a big game because Philly's going to say, hey, if you want to win, throw it to Tre'Quan Smith or throw it to Josh Hill, go ahead. How do you see what the Saints are going to do against that Philly secondary?
You weren't buying into Terrence Frederick?
No.
I still can't believe he was playing over Stanley Jean Baptiste.
People were so mad when Pierre Warren got caught coming out of training camp. I think you have a point. I mean, I think they are playing a little bit better, but you know, that's relatively speaking. They aren't playing better compared to the rest of the league. They're playing better than I think they were playing against the Saints. And I think their plan in that game was really dumb. Like, you go back and watch it. There's plays where they have, you know, there's one play, Tre'Quan Smith, like, it's like a 22 or 23 yard crossing route, just comes right across the middle of the field, nobody covering him. And over on the right sideline, Alvin and Mike Thomas are both running vertical routes, and there's four defenders. And it's like, there was stuff like that happening in that first game that made a bad secondary look worse because they just had a really bad plan. And, you know, that was the funny thing. People were talking about that Dallas game, and it's like, oh, they're Dallas exposed something. The Saints are predictable. You know, Dallas realized that if you take away Mike Thomas and Alvin, they can't do anything. They put a cornerback on Alvin, and they doubled Mike, and that was it. And, oh, he couldn't go anywhere else with the ball. The Saints knew that. They signed Dez Bryant. They signed Brandon Marshall. Just a lot of teams can't actually take away both guys while still stopping everybody else. So if they go into this game like that again, Ted Ginn's going to kill him. I mean, he's better than Tre'Quan. He's going to get open. And Tre'Quan was getting open that whole game, and Tre'Quan only got open in two games the whole season. So, you know, I think if they try to do that stuff, everybody else is going to make them pay. And I could see, you know, Josh Hill having some plays. If they leave Dan Arnold on a linebacker again, if Dan Arnold's active, you know, that was another thing they were doing. Like, you can't let Dan Arnold run a vertical route on third down with a linebacker in coverage and no safety over top. He's a wide receiver, actually. Like, they were just doing really dumb stuff in that game. And, you know, having a better plan, I think, is going to cut down on that 41 points. But I still think they're going to be able to do a lot of the things they want to do against that secondary.
All right, Nick, let's simplify this. A lot of times Ralph and I will talk, and I'll tell him that I think this is a game where the Saints are so superior that it's a shenanigan game. In other words, the only way the Saints lose is if shenanigans happen. And shenanigans are, you know, a catastrophic injury at a key player where your depth is tested, or a ridiculous overturn by a referee, which is inexplicable, or
mobile quarterback, Russell Wilson.
Yeah. A mobile quarterback where the play is dead, the line is trashed, and a quarterback makes a play, you know, out of nowhere, or a pick six, you know, where a tip ball is just like inexplicable shenanigans, basically. Do you agree with this statement? Aside from shenanigans, there's no way the Eagles win this game.
Yeah, it's definitely exactly what you just said. If they lose this game, it's you know, that's a huge disappointment. I mean, that's a bigger disappointment than losing on the last play against a team, you know, last year in the playoffs. I just feel like losing this game, you know, the shock wouldn't be the same, but like the devastation, I feel like, should be greater, because I think if this team, I'm almost afraid to say this, but like, if they don't make the Super Bowl, it's kind of a disappointment, right?
Well, here's my rule, Nick. If you lose a home playoff game, your season is devastating and feels empty. And I walked out of a dome a bunch of times under Jim Mora. Like, when you lose a road playoff game, it's just different. When you lose at home, you feel like we earned being home, and we're better than this team because, and that's why we're home and we lost. I say about this game, if the Saints lose, it's going to be one of the most painful experiences in Saints history, because it's going to be 3.5 hours of the Saints stepping on rakes. Like, right. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be penalties. It's going to be turnovers. It's going to just be them not playing well. So that's why it would be terrible. My question to you, Nick, is with Philadelphia, you talked about how their plan was so terrible and dudes are running wide open. So what are they going to do if they're not going to do that? Which Sean Payton and Drew Brees said, hey, this plan that they ran against us, we had never seen them do it on film. And so it was totally new to us, and it didn't matter. They still rose to them. But what do you think Philly's going to try to do? Because they're going to have to come up with a plan that's not what they did before.
Yeah, I mean, my expectation is that, you know, they kept Malcolm on Alvin on a lot of passing downs when he came out of the backfield. So I would expect them to do the same thing, you know, but I would probably, if they have the personnel to do it, I would probably try to play a big nickel most of the game. So that way, you know, you can still kind of double Mike and maybe drop someone back to the assistant other coverage. I don't think you can let Ted Ginn be one-on-one the whole game. Eventually he's going to get open. If you do that the whole game and they pass 40 times, you're probably giving up four plays at 25 or yards. So, you know, that would be the one thing that I think I would expect them to do differently. And then the other thing is they blitz Brees on 33% of their snaps. Drew kills the blitz, so probably shouldn't blitz that much again in the rematch.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hear you setting that up, and I think about how Mark Ingram could have a huge game potentially if they go nickel. Significant amount of plays, and there's an opportunity there for the Saints ran the ball pretty well in the Eagles in that 48-7 game, but I could just see this being a game where they lean on Ingram and surprise the Eagles by pounding the ball on the ground more than some expect. Nick, I made the statement earlier in the year when the Saints acquired Teddy Bridgewater that I had a hard time seeing Bridgewater and Brees both on the roster next season. We had Zach Strief on the podcast, and he disagreed with that. And I don't know if that was just wishful thinking or his gut, or if he had inside information where he felt like the Saints had an inside track on bringing Bridgewater back, even if Brees was back next year. Now that we're into the playoffs and further into the season, and I mean, you know, God willing, the offseason doesn't start Sunday for the Saints, but, you know, it's coming, whether it's after the Super Bowl or as soon as this week. Do you, as we get closer, do you have any sense of where things stand with Teddy Bridgewater? Do you see him on the roster with Brees next year?
I don't have any, like, you know, sense gathered from reporting or anything. So everything I'm saying is just my thoughts. So I don't want anyone to read too deep into it. You know, I would set the floor probably on Teddy's salary at about an average annual value of 17.5, and I would expect that to be even higher. You know, I think people think he's going to get paid a lot lower, and I just don't see that happening. I think he's going to have a pretty good market, and it's going to cost somebody something to keep him. You know, I think what it's going to come down to for him, you know, A, does he like the culture here? He sees what he has. You know, if you wait a little bit longer, you're going to be set up for success for probably a very long time. And, you know, he's waited quite a while to have that opportunity, but you know, if he goes somewhere else, it's probably not going to be as good. So he's going to have to, you know, weigh that. So does he want to lose another year sitting as a backup, you know, which is at least another year, because I would assume Drew comes back and he's got a year left on the contract. And then who knows after that? So would there be some assurance that one more year of Drew and then, hey, it's your time, Teddy? Like, if there is he willing to wait? I could see a scenario where he isn't willing to wait, though, because he's already, what, 3 years without having a chance right to play. So then now you're giving up a fourth year. And I know he's fairly young, but, you know, as a competitive guy, you probably believe in yourself to a certain extent that you could start looking at a situation that's probably not very good, but you think, hey, I can go there and I can turn that around because, you know, I'm good at what I do and I can change it. And I want to play and I don't want to wait. So it depends, you know, does he have the foresight to say, hey, I can stay here and compete for titles immediately, or I can go here and if everything goes right and the whole thing's on my back, maybe they turn it around. So it's a tough decision. I could see it either way for him. You know, you would, if you're a Saints fan, you probably hope that he waits around. And also, he's a lot better than he played in that game. I think that game was weird and I don't think anybody should too much stock in it. You know, Lyon's not out there. They're trying to get Mike Thomas a record. There's just a lot of weird stuff going on. And then when I rewatched it too, it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was live. But, you know, I don't know. I have no idea what he's going to do. They can afford him. They can figure out how to pay for him. They figure out how to pay for everybody. Just throw a bunch of fake years on 7 or 8 guys' contracts and whatever happens, happens. People talk about the cap, but it's taken me a long time to get here, but I don't even look at the cap anymore because they just do things that other people do and it always works. And, you know, at some point it's probably not going to work, but they can probably keep it going as long as they want by just pushing stuff out. So if they want to keep them, they can keep them. It's just up to Eddie.
Nick Underhill, a convert to Loomis Math. I love it. Guys, before we continue, I want to take a second to tell you about our new friends at TixBlix. The official ticket provider of Armchair Media Network. Unlike other ticket providers that sneak in extra fees and unexplained service charges, at TixBlix, the price you see is the price you get. Unnecessary fees shouldn't prevent you from seeing sporting events, concerts, and Broadway show of your choosing. Go to TixBlix.com, enter the code Armchair at checkout and receive 5% off your ticket purchase. That's TixBlix.com, promo code Armchair. TixBlix, guaranteed seats, guaranteed emotions. TixBlix is about the hardest word I could ever say in my life. So, Nick, give me a scenario. Nick, give me a scenario where things are going badly for the Saints, but it's not a shenanigans game. It's not turnovers. It's not these crazy things. What would you be looking for that Philly's doing well early in the game where you'll be like, oh, that's interesting. That didn't happen the first game. That could be a problem.
Oh, I guess their defense playing well. I don't
yeah,
know.
That's not happening.
It's a tough one. You know, I think the Saints are going to do what they do on defense. So if that were to happen, it would have to be Philly figuring out a way to kind of shut them down and, you know, get a lot of pressure and just make things really uncomfortable. And I just have a hard time seeing how that would happen. I just don't see it.
I feel like America doesn't believe in the Saints defense. Like the national media, like the people that aren't necessarily analytics people, just like commentators and you know, Stephen A. Smith and all that. I feel like I listen to shows, they don't believe in the Saints defense. They keep talking about Fitzpatrick and what he did to the Saints and all this. Like, am I crazy to believe that, like, and maybe you know this better than me, Nick, because you've been on a bunch of different shows nationally and all that sort of thing, that America just, they're just like, the Saints defense is not that good.
I don't respond to a lot of radio requests, so you guys should feel special, first of all. So I don't talk to a lot of people about the Saints. You know, it's basically my podcast and WWL News and, like, that's it, and the occasional Seth Dunlop show.
We are special. Thank you, Nick. We appreciate it.
I don't know what people are saying about him. I don't read a lot of stuff about the Saints. I kind of try to, you know, stay in my own lane, and I don't like to get influenced by other things people are saying. So I'm kind of like in this weird bubble. But, you know, the one thing that probably doesn't help is that, you know, I do see that PFF does not like a lot of Saints defensive players, and they tend to get a lot of bad grades. But I don't know. It seems like they're doing decently enough. You know, nobody's running on them. The pass defense is solid. You know, there's a few letdowns here and there. Eli Apple gets, you know, too many penalties. Marshawn has had a couple bad games, you know, Antonio Brown, Mike Evans. But other than that, you know, it feels pretty steady and solid. And, you know, I don't know. I feel like the defense is pretty good. For a while there, I felt like it was the better of two units, and it still might be. You know, I feel like things started to head back in the right direction against Pittsburgh, but if that's like kind of where the offense resides, then you're kind of looking more at the defense outside of that game. You know, I thought they were really, really good in the second half of the season. So, you know, I don't know. They might not be getting that respect, but they should be.
All right. Well, Nick, you've been awesome. Thanks for doing this. I have one last question for you. I think you've done a great job setting this up for us. And I think Saints fans should hopefully feel better after listening to this about this matchup.
I feel better.
I do too. Nick, what's the one thing that you feel like you'd like to see in this game? And I'm mainly looking for an answer that's something we either haven't seen before or a player improving. But so let's assume that the Saints are going to win this game for the sake of this question. And they're going to play a certain way. They'll either kind of grind it out or they'll win convincingly, whatever. But is there one thing you feel like you need to see to set this team up to you have confidence in the rest of the road?
I'm going to give you two, and neither one of them are going to be as clever as you want, but these are the two things that I feel like have to happen. One, like, I want to see the offense air it out and Ted Ginn makes a bunch of plays, and like, there's one sigh of relief, I guess, if you're a Saints fan, because you see him settled all the way back in. You see the offense click after, you know, 4 weeks of not quite what it was. You know, that last Philly game was kind of the peak, and then it kind of went downhill from there for the offense. So that would kind of be like a little bit of a return. And, you know, they probably weren't as good as they looked against Philly, against everybody else. But like, it's just been a little bit out of sorts, just a little bit. And getting back, the timing back, everything just settled back in, I think would be a big one. The other one, just seeing Teron Armstead block someone with two arms and then do that in the first quarter and then on the last play in the fourth quarter. Like, if those two things happen, I feel like things are really set up for them to kind of, you know, go as far as they want to go. Teron's road could end at any minute, but the longer you have him, the higher your odds are of the Saints getting to the Super Bowl, I think.
Well, so you gave us your prediction earlier, so that's pretty much it for me. The last thing, I guess, is, you know, you mentioned the bad scenario, the good scenario. Do you feel like this team, their struggles during the year, they didn't have like a losing streak, and they sort of fixed their problems as they won, right? They traded for Eli Apple, and they did that sort of stuff. And, you know, they didn't have a dip where they're like, oh my God, we've lost three in a row, we got to get another corner. It was like, we're winning, but Joe Flacco just drove the length of the field on us. We need another corner, and we need it now. So what's been the overall, you talked about at the beginning the vibe of this team, but how do you feel like it is compared to this time last year when they were heading into Minnesota?
See, the thing I think a lot of people forget about last year is at the end of the year, the defense was really kind of like falling apart slowly, and it was kind of just being held together bit by bit. Lattimore had the ankle injury. He wasn't quite Lattimore. You know, I don't feel like there was as much confidence anywhere about that team as there was about this team going into the playoffs. I think this team, the expectation is much, much higher for them to win. You didn't hear stuff about Sean Payton bringing in $250,000 and, you know, putting it on a table and, you know, flexing for everybody and doing all this stuff. So I just think everybody is much more confident. I feel like, you know, they're kind of looking, I don't want to say they're looking down the road, but I feel like the team itself just expects to win a lot more than last year. And I'm not saying they didn't expect to win last year, but, you know, from day one, they've just kind of embraced the expectations, the prove them right banners and all that stuff. They haven't kind of been afraid to talk about the future and what they want to do and where they want to go. And it's, you know, I just feel like the confidence around this team is just tremendously higher. And, you know, going into this game, it's just Sean's been really relaxed. He's been in a great mood all week. You know, it's just, I think they really expect to win, and they should. I mean, they've proven that all year. And if they don't, like we said, it will be a very shocking thing if they do not win.
See, Saints fans, feel better. That's what we're saying. So, Nick Underhill, thanks for joining us, guy. We appreciate it. We know you're swamped this week. People, you know where to find him. His podcast is awesome as well. Thanks, guy. We'll talk to you down the road, maybe.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Nick.
All right.